Welcome to the publicrecord.ca weekly roundup podcast for the week ending December 20th, 2014. We're going to title this episode The Return of Council, not only because it was the first council meeting of the new term, but because much like Return of the Jedi, you feel like the ending is just waiting for something to happen in the next episode. I am Joey Coleman, the host of your podcast, editor of thepublicrecord.ca, and the guy who spends way too much time at City Hall. This week, council sets up for a high noon showdown on the downtown dedicated bus lane, but just before the revolvers come out, they table it to the January meeting. The social service software fiasco. Council denies a public delegation. Council wants to talk with ride-sharing app maker Uber about the city's taxi regulations. Councillor Lloyd Ferguson, a taxi plate license holder, faces Provincial Offences Act charges for taxi safety violations by one of the taxis that leases his license. Changes to the planning department that are going to increase transparency, improve public confidence, and help streamline the process. Hamilton's Integrity Commissioner, Earl Bassey, says his health is delaying reporting to council, and council starts the process of hiring Hamilton's new Joint Integrity and Lobbyist Register. The Municipal Heritage Committee discusses the future of Century Manor. The city unveils the 2015 city budget process dates and announces that public consultation will occur before decisions are made. All that and more starting now. Council debated the bus lane. It quickly turned into a debate on LRT. It was billed as a debate on the bus lane, but has all things transit. It was billed as a debate on the bus lane, but with anything. This week's episode is made possible by contributors, including Alex Sevigny, John Neary, Damian Starr, Jim Harvey, and Marie Robbins. Thank you, and thank you to everyone who gives me the privilege of covering my hometown. Council's longest debate of the meeting was on the bus lane. In the end, they voted to defer the decision to January when they're expecting a staff report, but not before first turning the bus lane debate into a debate on LRT. Collins positioned himself as the strongest opponent of LRT, citing the public discontent over LRT, the Cannon bike track, and the expansion of bike programs in the city. Collins said when he went door-to-door this fall, he heard overwhelmingly from people they do not want LRT. Now, what was interesting about this debate was how Councillor Sam Marula came out as the leading proponent of LRT and countered the positions of Chad Collins point by point. Mayor Fred Eisenberger proved to be a steady hand during the debate, and after allowing for Collins and Marula to speak, reined it back into the topic of the bus lane. Once reined in, council debated whether they would vote on the bus lane prior to the staff report or wait till January when the staff report would be coming. Ultimately, they voted to wait till January. Here are some highlights from the debate. We'll start off with Chad Collins when he was moving the motion to kill the bus lane.
We all went door to door. We all interacted with our residents over the last number of months. And I think we all heard a consistent message that the bus lane, in addition to some other initiatives like the bike lanes and LRT and BRT, people did not receive those initiatives warmly. They did not welcome them with open arms. And I asked myself the rhetorical question again that was posed of Councillor Ferguson. Do the businesses support this project? And I think, just based on media reports, I don't represent the area, but having followed this quite closely through social media and certainly through the mainstream media, I would suggest that the businesses do not, by and large, support the changes that were made. Herself, does council, by and large, support the rapid transit initiative and, by extension, a dedicated bus lane? And I read with great interest through the election campaign the responses that all of my colleagues provided to the Hamilton Spectator in terms of light rail transit. And I can certainly easily do the math with those who were elected, and I come to the conclusion that 8 people on this council are not supportive to the light rail transit initiative, 6 are in favour and 2 are undecided. So if, hypothetically, there was a motion put today to this council to suggest that we move forward or show support again for the LRT initiative, I'm quite confident, if those positions haven't changed in the last 2 months, that there would not be sufficient support for the LRT initiative.
Sam Arula rose to the defense of the LRT project, making the economic uplift argument in a very interesting comparison to the Red Hill Valley Parkway.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I want to thank Councillor Collins for bringing forward his arguments. And I think we all understand that this particular issue is one that is very divisive. I think we all understand that we all received complaints as well, and myself included. But I think it's important that when we start something, that we finish it firstly, and it's presently not finished. The pilot project is. Secondly, when you look at why we even started this process, it's important to recognize that, as Councillor Collins alluded to, this has nothing to do, really, with public transit, and has nothing to do about moving from point A to point B faster. It has everything to do with assessment, growth, and economic development. And that's really the crux of the issue. And I understand that this is a big issue because it's a big ticket item, and it should be a big issue that we debate over a lengthy period of time.
Marula warned that council was playing into the hands of the province by giving the province an excuse to cut funding for LRT in Hamilton and give it to other communities.
I personally believe that in researching the LRT, and researching what it has done to other jurisdictions, that it will create an environment of assessment growth and tax revenue and complete streets. And basically, it would be irresponsible of me not to look at the fact that in some jurisdictions, property values have increased 200, 300, 400, 500%. Again, not too dissimilar to what we experienced from the expressway being built. And we know what's happening with the real estate market in Hamilton. There is a direct correlation to that, as there will be to the LRT if we were to pursue it. And I also recognize that if the province, who's waiting right now and has delayed their response and answering by design, and I really believe it's by design, because they want us to implode. And that's exactly what we're doing. We are blinking. We're sending a signal to the province that we really don't know what we want, that we are divided. And they're going to turn around and say to us, you're going to lose that $800 million that we promised because you guys don't know what you want.
Will Hamilton repeat our mistakes of the past and let another transit project pass us by? Sam Marula wasn't done. He pointed to this and said, we could have had a subway if only City Council had shown leadership in the past.
In this particular case, I honestly believe, I don't think we should be supporting the non-enforcement component, but I also believe that we should not even amend this at all and finish what we started. Research the data, look at this from a long-term perspective, not just in front of our tolls, and ensure that we're not subjecting our residents to the same nonsense that future or past councils did surrounding subways. You know how many people say to me, why does Hamilton not have a subway? You know why? Because Mr. Cook, who actually lives in Ward 4, East Hamilton, who was part of the HSR, Terry Cook's grandfather, put together a plan to implement a subway system. And you know what happened? Council threw it to the curb. And we are repeating the same mistake today. Not because of the data, but because of convenience. So I implore everyone to look to the future, not to the past, because the past has created an environment that is not competitive with some of the most successful municipalities in the world. And I want us to be part of that movement, part of that future, and let's not stop the Renaissance because its momentum has started. It's in not in quite in full swing, but we're headed that way. And I truly believe, at the bottom of my heart, I really believe that this, based on the data that has been provided in the research that I've looked at, will be a catalyst to those property values escalating 300%, 400%, 500% in the future. And I can't look at my constituents in the eyes and say, I threw that to the curb because you called me and said you didn't like it. Thank you.
Mayor Eisenberger brought the debate to an end.
I have a growing speakers list, and I was hopeful that we not get into an LRT debate, but the enforcement debate, which is really what's being asked for. And I respect all the comments, but I think maybe if we could narrow it to the issue at hand, which is the enforcement issue that's being recommended here, I think that would be helpful. And we are going to have a continuing debate on this issue, I'm sure.
And with that, the debate came to an end. The significance of that? The fact that Chad Collins and Sam Merula, who are normally seen as attached at the hip, appear to be the two leading forces on each side of this LRT debate. It will be interesting to see how this plays on their relationship and what impact it has on overall council dynamics. It was built by the province as a new software package that would make it easier and more efficient for the city of Hamilton to manage social assistance cases. But instead, it's turned into what one staff member with 40 years' experience described as the biggest fiasco they've ever seen.
Personally, I mean, I've worked for the city for 40 years. I've never come across a disaster like this. This is just terrible. What our staff are going through, what our residents are going through, so anything that we can do to get back to the old system, let's do it.
That was Jack Brown, Acting General Manager of Community and Social Services at Council on Wednesday. OW staff are stressed. The city has been forced to stop other programs such as employment support to divert resources to dealing with the software, its glitches, the overpayments, the underpayments, and to make sure that OW recipients have the funds they need to pay rent, utilities, and eat this month.
Our specialty unit staff, that being employment, family support, eligibility review, they've been pulled off of their normal work to handle all the phone calls and messages. We have a Christmas closure plan in place, and just the other week, we did site visits to meet with our staff. They are very demoralized. So Chris Murray, Helen Hill, Tomasic, Joanne, myself, and the directors were out to see the staff. Chris was completely blown away with the impact it had on our staff. They're working very long hours to validate the payments. Currently, we're completing manual applications. And we have regular conference calls that Bill and Carrie are on with the ministry concerning the fixes. A lot of the fixes have actually indicated that they're causing additional issues too.
We're for the province and we're not here to help. That basically sums up how Hamilton feels after the province ignored pleas from staff and now a unanimous motion from council. Councillors have been out meeting staff, and Councillor Terry Whitehead, who is chair of the Emergency and Community Services Committee, really summed it up well at Council on Wednesday. I'd like you to listen to his entire speech at Council, because this may be Terry Whitehead's finest hour on Council.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Mayor, this morning, actually it was pretty alarming when Jack Brown gave us the report at Emergency Community Services. And result of that, it was pretty clear that the morale is an all-time low amongst many of our OW caseworkers. And so we had offered up Matthew Green and myself as chair and vice chair on behalf of this council to visit every office in the city that provides that service and speak to many of the workers. I want to thank Jack Brown, who accommodated us with the tour. We visited four offices this morning, and I can tell you it was a tearjerker. When you listen to the stories being told of checks that are going out that you don't know what the amount is on the check and it's not reconciled with what's on the computer, when you hear stories that we have special services and different divisions of our OW, like employment services and et cetera, they can no longer deal with their clients in need because they're backfilling to help deal with this debacle within the management of the SAM system. The amount of work in regards to filling out data on the system is absolutely tenuous. Several pages of inputting. Our staff have developed relationships with their clients, and they can't talk to those clients. And when they do, they can't give them any answers. The frustration that is realized by our frontline workers as a result of the system was tantamount to an absolute mitigated disaster. The reality is that people are being impacted in this community. People are being evicted from their homes. Hydro is being cut off. Certificates are being sent to people that committed suicide. We are talking about human tragedy here. We are talking about not just those people being affected directly, but some of the most committed, dedicated, professional staff, and second to none in my humble opinion, are exposed to this frustration with no solution in sight. They feel frustrated with the messaging from the province of Ontario that it's nothing but a snag and that just a few checks went out. Ladies and gentlemen, that is definitely not the case, certainly from what we heard this morning. There's human tragedy here, both in the service delivery and certainly with the clients that expect those services. This is a Christmas season we're entering into, Mr. Chair. The worst season to end up with this kind of debacle. We have no choice to change the narrative. We know that staff have been in discussions with the Deputy Mayor of the Deputy Minister of the Province of Ontario and Comms to address these issues. They've indicated they're not prepared to flick the switch back. All we're asking, Mr. Chair, is this system isn't working. It should have been beta tested in small communities before it rolled out to the broader community. There's no question that we have workers that are leaving work under stress. There's no question we have workers that are carrying home and going to their families during a Christmas season and carrying the burden of knowing that a 17-month-old child and a single mother has no ability to go to a food bank after going to a food bank once, because you only can go there once a month or once a week. So there are significant challenges. These people care for the people they serve. It's having an emotional impact on our frontline servers. They're watching here tonight. They want us to challenge the province in the context of this debacle and the spin. I mean, the fact that they're saying it's just a glitch is spin. Let's be clear, it's spin. It's much larger than a minor screw up in the software. And the amount of time that staff have to work on this software in inputting is taking away from the frontline services of dealing with customer service. And that's what they want to do. That's what they're missing in this process. So this is a time-sensitive motion to pound the message, ask the media, ask, and certainly thank those frontline workers. Thank them for an understanding that it's a hopeless situation currently, but I know they're going to keep their pens to paper. They are courageous individuals that are committed to providing a service, and they will continue providing the services regardless of this debacle. But it's incumbent upon us to send a very strong and powerful message to the province of Ontario: this is not good enough. So at this point, Mr. Chair, I would ask my colleagues to unanimously support this particular motion, and I would ask Councillor Green to also provide some comments in regards to our experience this morning.
Ward 3, yep. Councillor Matt Green, on the human toll of this fiasco and the tough choices that OW recipients are forced to make.
They can make no mistakes about it. This is not a glitch. This is a failure in a system and at a time of the year when people are most vulnerable. And so I just wanted to support the motion in a way that we send a clear message that something needs to be done about this, that communications need to come forward, and contingency plans need to be put in place to be able to make sure that these families do not fall through the cracks. And so, it's such a privilege today to go through all the different facilities and hear from the workers, but also it shouldn't be missed that on the other side of that table are the people who are having to make choices between food and rent and between Pampers and formula. And these are calls that I'm taking every single day. And so I'm in a lot of ways feeling like I'm on the front lines with them. And so I hope that the province is going to be able to come up with a solution very quickly.
There's more on this topic in Wednesday's podcast, the After Council podcast, which is available on thepublicrecord.ca and on our iTunes channel, where Councillors Terry Whitehead, Matt Green, and local activist Graham Crawford discuss this issue in depth and the entire council meeting. In a precedent-setting decision this week, council unanimously voted down a delegation request from James Gallagher to speak to them about term limits. Why did they vote it down? Well, here's what Councillor Lloyd Ferguson had to say when he moved the motion to deny.
So I'm not sure, Madam Chair, why we'd even hear delegation. We have no authority over this. And so I don't really see any point. I think we should just receive it and advise them to go to the province and make their pitch with them because we have no jurisdiction.
It's unprecedented. Council has never turned down a public delegation request for non-legal reasons. Former Councillor Brad Clark wrote on Twitter that some councillors voted officially to deny citizens' right to speak on term limits is unconscionable. And it is if council is actually saying we don't want to hear about term limits, if what we're seeing is a change in council's procedures, the council saying we're going to stick strictly to what we can legislate on and we're not going to speak about issues such as the federal arrangement with U.S. Steel or door-to-door postal delivery cancellation, two issues that they've heard numerous delegations on, I guess that's fine because it's consistent. But if it's a matter of they don't want to hear public delegations on matters they're not comfortable with, then they've set a very dangerous tone to start off this council term. What is it? We have to give council good faith and assume that councillors have looked at the amount of time that they're spending in meetings and have decided to spend their time solely on matters that are clearly within their jurisdiction and not to veer into matters of provincial and federal authority. In November, I wrote a piece about Uber, the ride-sharing app that's taken North America by storm and is currently available in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and just last Friday launched in Edmonton. Council unanimously ratified a motion this week asking Uber to speak with city staff and to brief Uber on the city's licensing regulations for taxis. Now, this was fairly routine when it was introduced the previous Wednesday at General Issues Committee, but this week it was announced that Councillor Lloyd Ferguson, who owns four taxi license plates and declares conflict of interest on all taxi matters, including licensing tribunal minutes, is facing Provincial Offence Act charges because one of the taxis that is subleasing a plate off of somebody who Lloyd Ferguson leases his plate to had safety violations. Ferguson says that he's not involved with the taxi itself and he's not aware of what the safety violations are. He was surprised to be named in the charge. The city says that they are now charging everyone involved with the taxi because they've had challenges with sorting out who is ultimately responsible for safety violations. Is it the driver, the owner of the vehicle, the taxi broker, so the taxi company, or the license plate holder? By charging everyone involved in the chain, the city hopes to sort this out and improve taxi safety. The optics are not good for the city. One of the reasons why the city is saying Uber cannot operate without taxi plates is that the plates ensure safety. However, the argument has been made by Uber in the United States that taxi plates and licenses are actually not about safety and they're about protecting an industry of plate holders who are removed from the front lines of the taxi service. It will be interesting to see how this plays out in the Court of Public Opinion. The Provincial Offences Act hearing is scheduled for January 16th. Now for some really good City Hall news. New General Manager of Planning and Economic Development Jason Thorne and new Chief Planner Steve Robichaud have made some changes to how the Planning Department will operate. Firstly, the regular private meetings between the Planning Department staff and the Hamilton Halton Home Builders Association are going public. The HHABA and City of Hamilton Joint Liaison Committee, as it's been called, involved regular secret meetings between City of Hamilton staff and developers. The public was not invited, not informed, and when Catch Hamilton did a Freedom of Information request to find out more about this secret group and its secret meetings, they discovered that the minutes of these meetings were very poorly kept. There was no information about what was being discussed. What was clear was HHABA felt that these were very productive meetings for advancing their interests. There was no public discourse, no public information, and it sure did generate a lot of conspiracy theories about exactly what city staff were doing behind closed doors. Here's General Manager Jason Thorne telling councillors about the changes.
Items. One is that I just wanted to advise committee of some changes we've made to the structure and format of our liaison group with the Hamilton Halton Home Builders Association. We had in the past been meeting on an approximately monthly basis with the group. Going forward in consultation with the Home Builders Association, we're putting in place a new structure. We're going to have twice per year a public forum with the development industry where we would have our staff present on some key issues that are of interest to the development community and presentations from the development industry as well in a forum that's open to any member of the public to attend. We'll, of course, advise committee members if they would like to attend as well and observe those presentations. We don't yet have a firm date as to when the first one will be. We'll be aiming for sometime in February. And we're meeting shortly with the home builders to devise an agenda for that. So we'll be doing that twice per year going forward.
And Jason, where will those meetings be held?
Haven't yet landed on a venue. We were considering council chambers as one option.
Wonderful.
But likely somewhere in City Hall, so that there's lots of room for members of the public if they want to come and attend and observe.
I would encourage that. I think it's so important that we have these as public meetings, number one, and that number two, they be open to the public, and I think it would be appropriate to have it at City Hall somewhere. So thank you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I did advise all members of council late last week about changes to the structure of the Planning Division. Steve has done a restructure for his team, just recognizing that the previous structure of an east-west orientation wasn't really reflective of the types of issues, the types of expertise we need in our planning staff, the kinds of issues they were addressing. So Steve has put in place a new structure where we have an urban team, which will be led by Ed John, a suburban team to be led by Tammy Kitai, who's a new planner on staff, and a rural team to be headed by Heather Travis. Each of those three will still report through Anita as the manager and through Steve as the chief planner. So we circulated to council those names, contact information, as well as a map showing how those divisions break down.
This may seem inside ballpark, but the changes to the structure of the planning department could make a significant improvement in how the city is perceived for developers and the community. One of the challenges that I've seen with the planning department is that planners are bouncing around different types of files all the time. Also, our planning department people get promoted or they take jobs elsewhere. And when they move, a new planner has to take over the file. With having suburban, urban, and rural teams, we now have managers who are managing parts of the city and managing specific focuses. Now, an interesting thing with the map there is that when you hear urban, suburban, and rural, you may be thinking that Hamilton Mountain's urban. It falls within the suburban team, but the urban and suburban divide is not that great. Rural has very unique planning needs. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Council's Integrity Commissioner Earl Bassey wrote them a letter citing health and personal reasons. Bassey says that he has been unable to complete his investigations. Bassey says that 5 of his 6 investigations will be complete and reports presented to council at their January 21st meeting. The one outstanding complaint that he's not reporting on also is subject of a separate court case. Bassey says that he is awaiting the outcome of that court case before he makes a ruling. In all likelihood, this file will be passed on to the new Integrity Commissioner. In January and February, Councillors Lloyd Ferguson, Aidan Johnson, and Arlene Vanderbeek will be interviewing candidates for Hamilton's new joint lobbyist register and Integrity Commissioner position. We'll see if things change. The Municipal Heritage Committee held their monthly meeting on Thursday, and the main topic of discussion was the Century Manor. Century Manor being a building on the site of the St. Joe's Mountain campus, which is provincially owned. Unfortunately for the building, it's only municipally designated, which means that the province can tear it down if they so choose. The province says that the building is suffering from mold and other structural deficiencies. Members of the Municipal Heritage Committee say that there is a lot of private sector interest in taking ownership of the building, restoring it, and also developing the surrounding lands. The province has not yet been receptive to these ideas, and the Municipal Heritage Committee voted to send a letter to the province seeking a meeting with provincial staff to discuss how to save the building. In another positive development at City Hall, the 2015 city budget process dates were announced this past week, and this year, in a change from tradition, council will hear public delegations prior to making decisions. Breaking the City Hall tradition of treating public consultation as an opportunity to consult the public by telling them what City Hall plans to do instead of consulting the public about what the public thinks City Hall should do. Public delegations for the 2015 budget will occur on Tuesday, February 24th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. This is the only opportunity in the entire year to speak to council outside of business hours. Signing up to be a public delegation is easy. Just email the city clerks at hamilton.ca and request to speak. You do not have to tell them exactly what you're going to say, because here's the great thing about the 2015 budget. Everything the city does is related to the city budget. 2 years ago, I did a delegation asking for open data. 3 years ago, I did a delegation asking for open data. This year, I'll probably do a delegation asking for open data. The preliminary budget figures will be released by City Hall at 10 a.m. on January 2nd. I will be at City Hall for budget release, and I'm hoping to put out a podcast that afternoon with the preliminary budget numbers and hopefully speak with some city experts on what the budget means. I will try to create a special page on the publicrecord.ca to track the budget and to track all the meetings. Typically, the budget process begins in November. Due to the election, it's going to be condensed, making it a much more intense 3-month process than what we usually see. That's it for this end-of-week podcast on the publicrecord.ca. Thank you again to everyone that supports my journalism and makes this possible. The background music that you heard during this podcast is from CC Mixer, and it's entitled CC Remix by user Grey Guy. His license is Creative Commons by Attribution. The website is ccmixter.org. This podcast is licensed Creative Commons by Attribution, share alike. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, post it to your Twitter, your Facebook profiles, and become a supporter of The Public Record at thepublicrecord.ca. I want to know what you think. What do you want to hear from the publicrecord.ca podcast? This is the first podcast that I've done that's a weekly roundup. There was a little bit of work involved in getting video files, finding the clips I wanted to run, and putting it all together. And just to make it a little bit more interesting, I had some tech issues and other things that had to be sorted out. So the podcast is coming out early in the week instead of on Saturday. That's going to be corrected in the new year, because now I've learned how to actually do all of this. And so I definitely want your feedback. What do you want to hear? My goal is to try to keep the weekly roundup podcast to about 30 minutes. Of course, the great thing about audio and the internet is that you don't have to arbitrarily set to 22 minutes, 30 minutes, or 52 minutes. You can set to what the topic needs. So most weeks, again, we'll go 30 minutes, but we may go a little bit longer. Again, I want to hear your feedback. Stop me on the street, email me, tweet me, let me know what you're thinking. Thanks again for subscribing.